Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, July 20th, 2017. This is the post GFW Impact PW Torch livecast. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Mike, I'm doing well, though that episode, that was not a good one.
We had felony kidnappings and people being held against their will. We had, I think Conan admitted that they murdered Crazy Steve. There was a lot going on here. And let's sort of start with that. I mean, we're going to get to your phone calls in just a little bit at 515-605-9345. Again, just hit the number 1 when you're on hold. That's going to put you in the caller queue. The number again is 515-605-9345. A lot to get to tonight. Some GFW news that was making some headlines earlier this week. And then, of course, this episode of Impact as well. But yeah, let's sort of start with... let's start with that main event angle. And again, it's El Patron and LAX and the ongoing saga of whether or not he's going to join that group. And interesting developments there, I guess. I mean, they sort of had... There was one thing I liked about it. And that's that they sort of threaded that throughout the whole show with different segments throughout the whole broadcast, which for your main event storyline, I like. Now, I think the structure of that was good. The content... I think was a little questionable, but what was your sort of overall thoughts on the whole presentation tonight with LAX kidnapping El Patron's brother and father, trying to force them to convince him to join LAX, and then beating the brother down in the ring and threatening to pull off Dos Caras' mask before El Patron comes out and makes a save. And if you miss the show, El Patron makes a save. He then reluctantly seems to join LAX in telling Conan he will if he leaves his family alone. But then, as it turns out, that wasn't going to be the case, and El Patron attacked, and that's how the show ended, with El Patron ripping off the LAX shirt that he had just put on minutes ago. What were your overall thoughts on that whole angle, how they threaded it throughout the show, and then just the content of what we saw from the beginning of the show to the end of that main event angle?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately for them, the page... El Patron situation is still kind of overshadowing everything as that continues to develop. So it was really hard to get into it once again. Like you said, though, I think they did a good job of weaving that in throughout the show and going back to it and building it to the main event. However, I did not like El Patron beating up all of LAX by himself. Him joining the group probably wouldn't have been the right call, but him beating them all up by himself just once again makes them look way too weak. So did not like how it played out, really.
I was also a little bothered with, and again, there's nothing they could do about it, but this is tape before that incident happened, but it just felt, we talked about how last week it felt a little uncomfortable. I thought it was a little uncomfortable again here tonight when El Patron is in the ring with Conan at the end of the show, when he's talking about how Conan has that Latin temper, and I think El Patron at one point even said, I understand it, you know, I have the same thing, or something like that. It's like, yeah, so we've heard. but I sort of agree with you that it was, the cloud of that is still sort of hanging over their head for sure. And that sort of brings up, you know, another point with this, is not only, we know they weren't going to edit him out of the show, and he is still technically suspended, but they advertised him this week. If you went on the website, last week there was no mention of Alberto El Patron at all. He was not in any of the advertising materials on their social media accounts or online, as far as I'm aware, in the build-up to the show. And then this week it was different. You know, this week they were pumping up the next chapter in the LAX El Patron storyline, which leads me to believe that the likely ending point of this whole situation is that the suspension is going to end at some point and he's going to return. If you know, maybe I'm wrong, but they were advertising him. So it seems like they're comfortable advertising him. I would imagine they'd be comfortable having him back in on the roster at some point. But what were your thoughts on them using him in advertising materials this week? Do you read anything into that? And were you okay with them, you know, using Alberto El Patron as an advertising hook for the show, given the situation?
No, I don't think they should have until we know everything that happened. And, you know, the last I saw is that Paige may be the one charged, or they're kind of looking at her. But even still, it's just a bad situation. I would have just avoided it altogether. And he's still suspended. So I don't see any reason why they would have promoted him so heavily online. Yeah, no, I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, neither did I. You know, I thought it was in poor taste, like you said, to sort of use him in promotional materials. And yeah, you're not going to take him off the show. Fine. We talked about that last week. They really don't have much of a choice. They can't. I mean, if you think of just the sheer number of hours they would have to edit off of what they had taped, it probably would be, you know, next to impossible. But you don't have to advertise him. And especially, you don't have to advertise him as, you know, the main event angle. I also think, you know what, while they needed to keep him on the show, maybe they could, maybe they couldn't, but could they have moved some things around to not close the show with El Patron? Could you have made something else, you know, your quote-unquote main event, whether it was one of the X Division matches or something? I mean, and I guess, you know, looking at the rest of the show, there's really not another logical closing point that I can think of off the top of my head. But could they have edited the show maybe to get him out of the main event? Or would that even have mattered? I mean, if he's on the show, is it one of those things where if he's on the show, he's on the show and it doesn't really matter where his placement is? Or do you think maybe it would have been better to try to edit that segment and put it somewhere else in the broadcast? Maybe have the El Patron segment be the 9:30 segment and you end the show, you know, with the Fatal 4-Way or something like that? Or does it really not matter, you think?
I think they maybe should have tried if it was possible, but there were so many segments on the show leading to that, that you would have had to move everything around in that regard. Cause they needed those segments of the kidnapping and the threats and all that stuff. So it did kind of put him in an unenviable position just due to the sheer amount of segments he was in. But yeah, nothing really strikes me as what could have ended the show, but I mean, maybe they could have just gone with that 4-way. It would have felt a little odd, but it felt even stranger ending it with El Patron again.
Another thing that, again, started last week, and we saw it again tonight, was another mention of Rey Mysterio. I think Rey Mysterio was mentioned 3 times on the show last week. Again here tonight, El Patron and his promo as part of that main event segment mentioned that El Patron said that him and Conan and Rey Mysterio had gone through so much together. But they specifically named Rey Mysterio, which I thought was interesting, especially considering just earlier this week, PW Torch editor Wade Keller reported on his Wade Keller hotline for VIP members that Rey Mysterio was, well, actually, I believe Sports Illustrated reported that he had reached out to WWE and GFW. And I think Wade Keller, PW Torch editor, followed that report with reporting on the Wade Keller hotline that WWE had passed on Mysterio's pitched return, and that, you know, there was in all likelihood he could be negotiating with GFW now. Interesting, I just think, to have him brought up 3 times or 4 times now in the last 2 weeks, given the news that this week that they could actually be talking. Is he a guy that you think would slot in here? Because I know I said it last week, and I still think it would behoove them to get away from El Patron. And I think Mysterio is a guy that you could really slide into that Patron spot right now. And you could do the same story. Whatever you were going to do with El Patron, you could continue to do with Rey Mysterio. The fact that they've brought him up so many times here over the last couple of weeks, even if it wasn't thought of for this to be the way you utilize Rey, even if they were thinking we're going to bring in Rey and keep El Patron, just the fact that you've referenced him now over the last several weeks, I think makes it easier as well to potentially bring in Mysterio, remove yourself from El Patron, and just sort of slide Rey into that spot. You know, I was sort of just speculating last week that, hey, maybe this is something they want to look towards. And then here we are this week with some reporting that, hey, you know what, there might actually be some talks going on here about it.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well that they keep bringing him up. He's, of course, really good friends with Conan. I think, you know, if they can, and if he's like cost effective, they should bring him in, get a little bit of good publicity going for them for the first time in a while. Also, I mean, just if they're going to bring him in, they're of course going to push him to the top of the company. I don't think they should, you know, he's 42. Those days are kind of over, but that's what they're going to do. But if they're going to do that, if nothing else, he's a much better babyface than El Patron. Even without all these scandals, he's just a naturally more likable guy. El Patron's a better natural heel. So he's definitely someone that will bring in more goodwill and they could, you know, build around for I don't know, a year or so. So I think if he is available and, yeah, if the price is right, they should bring him in for a bit.
Yeah, I think a lot more people would be a lot more excited about Rey Mysterio than they are El Patron. I think Mysterio brings in more of the casual fan for sure. And you know what? I think he brings in more of the hardcore fan as well. Ironically enough, I saw Rey Mysterio at an indie show this weekend. I attended the XWA show in Providence, Rhode Island, their anniversary show, and he wrestled Ricochet on that show. A really good match. Not overly long, but a really good match. And showed to me, you know, I came away from that thinking, hey, you know what? Whether it's GFW or whether it was WWE, yeah, he's 42 years old, but there's some gas still left in that tank for sure. And I almost feel like, you know what, the GFW schedule is better for Mysterio at this point than the WWE schedule, and maybe he'd go back as a part-time guy. But, you know, the Hardys didn't. You know, I think people said, hey, you know, the Hardys are sort of a legacy act at this point, but they've gone back to a full-time schedule. They're working house shows. But Mysterio, I think, coming in on the GFW schedule where there's not as many dates, all the televisions are taped in a row, and then you've got, you know, 6 or 7 weeks off, depending upon how many television tapings you, or how many episodes you tape over the set of a television taping. You know, I almost feel like it's a better spot for him. You know, the money obviously would be much better in WWE, I'm sure, but just from a longevity standpoint, you know, if he were to go back to WWE and go on a full schedule, we saw the injuries that were piling up towards the end of his run in WWE. He was hurt a lot. He seems to have been able to avoid that now that he's working in Mexico and he's working on the indie scene, and I think it's because of the less dates. You know, there's more time for his body to recover. He's been through a lot. He's been doing this for a long time. So I almost feel like GFW, while it's probably less money, you know, not probably, I can almost assure you it's less money, it's a better spot in terms of, I think he'd be able to last longer there than he would in a full-time WWE schedule for sure. And even, you know what, even part-time, I mean, with the exception of Brock Lesnar, and, you know, if you want to count Goldberg, even their part-time guys, for the most part, are still going on the road. I mean, John Cena is still doing some house shows. Even the part-time guys that they've brought in are, you know, Jericho even, you could say, they're part-time. Yeah, they're part-time in the sense that they're in and out. They're not there all the time. But when they're there, they're running that full-time schedule, and I'm not sure that's best for him at this point.
Oh, completely agree. I mean, he missed like 2 out of his last 3 years, basically, if you totals up all of his time. He was beat down. I haven't seen probably the last 5 or 6 episodes of Lucha Underground, but I've seen everything else up to that point. And Mysterio has been pretty impressive there, I felt. And that schedule seems to have benefited him quite a bit as well. So like you said, he's got some gas left in the tank. I don't want to see him as the number one babyface in 2017, but, you know, he's not a bad move for a while.
Yeah, I think there's some goodwill there, if nothing else. And like you said, you know what, right now,
yeah,
GFW needs some goodwill. And I think bringing in Rey Mysterio would give them a little bit of that, because you're going to be hard pressed to find someone, you know, whether it's from a fan standpoint or someone who works in wrestling who is going to say something bad about Rey Mysterio. You know, he's one of the most universally loved people, I think, in all of wrestling because of the way he handles himself and what he can do in the ring. So I think it'd be a good move for sure. And you know what? I'd like to see it happen as a replacement for El Patron. I know I said that last week, and I'll continue to say that until it happens. I think you want to get away from this guy. I think we both agree there. And you know what? Now you're at a point, if you're talking about replacing El Patron with Mysterio, you might be talking about a situation where it's really not even costing you that much, you know, from a money standpoint. You just sort of shift that money from El Patron over to Mysterio as well. And I'm sure, you know, hey, Mysterio's probably going to bring with him a little more of a price tag than El Patron is, but at least you're not adding whatever it is, and I'm just throwing numbers out there. You know, you're not adding $300,000 onto your payroll. You're going to take away the $200,000 you were paying El Patron, and now you've only got to come up with an extra $100,000 instead of coming up with three. You know, it's something along those lines. Let's say they can sort of use some of that El Patron money to offset whatever Mysterio is going to cost them.
Oh yeah, and plus Mysterio is going to sell a lot more merchandise too, so they can certainly make it up that way. It's been tough to say throughout TNA's history, really, who is going to bring in ratings. Because it seems almost nobody has, but maybe Mysterio can help bring them to that 400,000 level that they've been looking for. And especially, they're looking to get on a new network, signing a big name like Mysterio, a likable guy, pretty much scandal-free except for those, I think, two suspensions a few years ago. But yeah, bringing him in, I think, would be a good move, especially, yeah, trying to land on a new network at the end of the year as well.
Merchandise is a good point. That actually is going to play into something we're going to talk about a little later with a guy that GFW lost this week. But anyway, we got to go to our first break. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls at 515-605-9345. Andrew Socek and Mike McMahon with you talking this week's episode of GFW Impact and all things Global Force Wrestling here on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
The epic. Wrestling Night in America, one of the new programs here on the PW Torch Livecast. Of course, all of Wade Keller's shows are now on the Podcast One Network. That debuted this past Tuesday when him and Jason Powell breaking down Monday Night Raw. I know him and Travis Bryant were breaking down SmackDown on the Wednesday edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can do so. Go to your podcast app, whatever you use on your phone. You can go to iTunes and just search the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and you'll find that on Podcast One. Put it in your feeds, and you'll get all the Wade shows. And if you're listening to this on a podcast feed, you're already, of course, subscribed to the PW Torch Livecast. So we're going to get to some phone calls in just 1 second. There's just one more topic I want to hit on before we get to the phone lines at 515-605-9345. Andrew, you mentioned merchandise with Rey Mysterio, which I agree with you. He'd sell a whole lot more merch than probably anybody that they have right now. One of the things that I found interesting today, I was reading a report where Magnus, a guy that we've talked about on the show plenty in the past, reported, I think, from the Wrestling Observer that he will not be back with GFW. He essentially came in on a handshake agreement to drop the Global Force title. And now, even though they were negotiating with him, they couldn't come to an agreement, and he is going to move on, and we'll see where he ends up. But one of the things in the report that I thought was interesting, again, this is, I believe, from the Wrestling Observer, Magnus and GFW couldn't come to terms on a contract, and they didn't report that this is why, but they also pointed out that two of the things that GFW is doing from a contract basis right now is talent are not getting any merchandise money. At least, maybe that's a general, you know, a general thing, I don't know. But it didn't seem like that merchandise money was being worked into wrestler contracts. And the other thing that stuck out to me was apparently GFW wants 10% of outside bookings. A couple of things I want to dive into here. First of all, what do you think on them losing out on Magnus and that story sort of never being wrapped up? Could he have been useful moving forward? And then number two, those two little nuggets there on the fact that talent aren't getting merch worked into their deals and that the company wants 10% of outside bookings. What are your thoughts on those two topics?
Yeah, I think that's unfortunate with Magnus. At one point, I thought he could be the number one babyface in that promotion. I mean, he's not The Rock, he's not Steve Austin, but he's got a good look, good talker. He seems likable. And when they brought him back, I was excited to see what they were going to do with him. They turned him heel. They had this Bruce Pritchard storyline going on, which half the company seems to be involved with at the moment with him. Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, he's a good wrestler. I would assume he will someday end up in at least in NXT, but I guess he has some heat with somebody there, or there's some sort of rumors keeping him out. And looking at the merchandise, that's really bizarre. Because, you know, it's like a benefit to the wrestlers, like get yourself over, get your character over, you'll make more money, you'll sell stuff. It's just a natural benefit. And to take that away from them, that's awful. I mean, yeah. Cause a lot of wrestlers are going to be wanting to, you know, at that level, it's like, should I go to ROH or should I go to Global Force? Well, if they're going to take away part of your money, what's the incentive to go there? Cause the ratings are actually probably similar if you added up every market for Sinclair. And the 10% is interesting as well. I know when TNA started, Jerry Jarrett was trying to get that going. I think that met a lot of backlash at the time too. So to see Jeff Jarrett go back to that, that seems like another unfortunate thing. And it seems like it's going to scare wrestlers away if they're debating, say, between ROH and GFW.
Yeah, I think it makes GFW look small time, to be honest with you. I mean, they're sort of striving to be a big-time wrestling promotion, and the not giving talent merch, like you said, it sort of, that's an incentive to go out and get yourself over. Sell your t-shirt, sell your merchandise, your stuff, you know? If you do it on your own, if you get yourself over, you reap the benefits of selling that merchandise. And then the 10% is what really bothers me. I think even more so than the merch, to be honest with you, because at least from a merchandise standpoint, you know, you can make the argument that, okay, well, GFW is producing all of the merchandise, you know, they're staffing the warehouse, they're renting the warehouse space. There's a lot of costs is associated with that. I think you can make an argument there, but I don't think it's a very good one, but I think you could at least make an argument there. The 10% on bookings to me is just, it really, really makes them look small time. You know, do you really need, if you're GFW, you've only got maybe 20 guys on your roster at most, and not even all of the guys are signed to full-time contracts. Do you really need $50 on a guy who's going to go out and make a $500 payday? I mean, it just makes him look so small and so not petty's not the right word, but it makes him look small. You know, it makes him come across to me as a small-time promotion. You know, I think that their rationale is, well, these guys can demand more money on the indie circuit because they're on our TV, so we should get a piece of that. But I would argue that, you know what, is it worth it? Is the, let's say, you know, let's, who knows what it is. Let's say the $500, if you're GFW, the $500 you're making on a weekly basis, getting 10% of all of your talent bookings around the country, you know, whatever it is, let's say it's between $500 and $700 a week. Is that really worth the perception that's out there by you taking 10% of the pay of the guys that are on your TV? I mean, I don't get it. You know, I don't think, and they're also, it's not like they're in the business of building guys either. I mean, for the most part, they're signing guys that already have names. Most companies are, even WWE's at this point, you know, they're signing guys that at least have buzz on the indie scene, and that buzz was created on their own. I think asking guys to give up 10% of their pay on outside bookings just because they're on your TV just makes you look really, really, it makes you look minor league. You know, it really makes you look minor league.
Well, and plus adding to that, you know, there's going to be exceptions. I can't imagine Rey Mysterio would come in and they say, well, if you make 10 grand at an indie show, you're going to give us 1,000.
Yeah. No, like, way.
That's not
no
gonna work. So So it's, that's going to piss off the lower card wrestlers. It's just not a fair system because, I mean, you know, some people are jobbers, some people are on a lot, you know, nobody's positioned the same, and it's just silly. It's a bad move.
Yeah, and, you know, with some of these, I mean, if you're talking about a guy, because not everyone's going to go out and make multiple thousands of dollars for an indie appearance. So, like you said, you could literally be talking about somebody going out, maybe it's a mid-card guy who's going to make $500 for a decent size indie show. And it's like, what, he's got to send Jeff Jarrett $50? I mean, come on. It's just, it looks so, so minor league. Anyway, let's get to some phone calls. And we got a lot more to talk about, both some more news that we'll get to in a little bit on their live events coming up on that New York loop and Connecticut loop in the beginning of August. And we'll talk more about this week's episode of the show as well and break down Impact. But let's go to the phone calls right now at 515-605-9345, and this is Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Pretty good.
Yeah, no complaints.
Great. So, to add to the conversation which you two have been having regarding Rey Mysterio, it is my understanding that Rey has been presented with some sort of official deal memo or hard copy contract offer type thing on Monday.
Well, that would sort of fit with the timeline. Yeah, I mean, I think the Sports Illustrated report came out on Monday, and I think Wade had reported the news that he knew. I believe that was on Monday afternoon's Wade Keller hotline. It may have been Tuesday's, but yeah, no, it was all early in the week for sure.
So my first question, tying into this whole Alberto El Patron situation, with Alberto being suspended, and even though he'll probably be brought back, my theory is that Alberto will be brought back for the August 17th Destination X taping. He'll drop the title there and then be summarily dismissed. And with rumors of Bobby Lashley being pressured to leave the wrestling industry by his MMA sparring and training partner and his camp, if Alberto and Bobby leave, who will the number one and number two baby faces in Global Force Wrestling be, respectively, for question number one?
That's a really good point. That's something we hadn't really talked about, I think, is that Lashley news. I believe that came out after the show last week, that American Top Team was trying to make it known that they think, you know, he should focus on MMA here. He's 40 years old or pushing there. So, time running out in an MMA career is, just, you know, by the mere factor of his age, but he has performed quite well. I think it's an interesting point. You know what? I think it's probably, it's a little fluid right now. I don't think we really know for sure, because they could be bringing people in from the outside. You know, I think if Andrew mentioned this earlier, and I think he's right, if they were to sign Rey Mysterio, they're pushing him as their number one babyface the second they get him on the show. And then as far as who else is sort of in that mix, you know, I think they could do something with James Storm, although they're doing that injury angle right now. And then the other thing I'd throw out there is it seems like they're really trying to build the X division. There was a lot of X division, a lot of X division matches on this show tonight. They're running the Super X Cup. So maybe they take a babyface out of there and try to make, you know, the number one X division babyface be the number two babyface in the company. Don't know who that would be quite yet. I think a lot of it sort of depends on how this tournament shakes out that they're running right now. But I wonder if I don't know if they could do it right away. I think it'd be early to do it, you know, as soon as August. But down the road, I think that could be something they were looking to do as well. Andrew, who do you see as maybe being those replacements? If, let's say, they were to lose Lashley and they were to lose El Patron in a small window of time, who do you think could be some guys they go to sort of fill those spots?
Yeah, the first name that came to my mind, and I don't think this is a good pick, but they're really pushing Matt Sydal. They see something in him and keep giving him TV time and all these big wins. So, you know, in case of emergency, I could see them maybe giving him a big push. Moose was another thought that came to my mind that they might try pushing. And in another emergency situation like that, maybe turn EC3 back and go with him for a bit, are kind of the three names I was thinking of.
Yeah, you know what? And then Eli Drake, I mean, from a heel standpoint, they went with Eli Drake getting the win in that fatal four-way tonight. So, you know, if they were to lose Lashley from a heel standpoint, you know, Drake could be a guy they move in into that spot as well.
Very possible. Question number two for you guys concerns the Global Force women's division. With Sienna now currently holding the Global Force women's title and apparently setting her sights on Gail Kim, do you see any remote possibility at all that Gail Kim may retire, or I should say, either retire as champion at Bound for Glory, or if she wins the championship at Bound for Glory, not retire right away at the end of the year, and extend her timeline until after she drops the title, but either way, Sienna not have the women's title anymore.
You know, that's a tough one, I think. You know, Gail Kim, I believe I read this week, she's going to be working with, she'll be working with the company as an agent after she retires at the end of the year. I think they will give her another title run, you know, as short as it may be, before she retires. I wouldn't be opposed to her retiring as champion either. You know, generally I am. I generally think, you know, you want to use your champion on their way out the door to put somebody over, get somebody else ready. But, you know, I think if anyone deserves, especially in that division within the history of TNA, if anyone deserves to retire with that title, it's Gail Kim. You know, for what she's done for that division, she's been the longest tenured female wrestler there, has by far had the most success from the women's division in TNA and Impact. So I wouldn't be opposed to that. I mean, if it fit the story and they told it right, I don't think I'd have a problem with that. But I think I prefer at this point right now to see them keep the belt on Sienna for the long term until you find someone that you think you're ready to bring in that has some legitimate credentials that could challenge her, because Sienna has, you know, an MMA background. She just looks legitimate as an athlete, and I think that I'd prefer them to keep the belt on her, maybe have her beat Gail Kim in a title defense to really sort of cement her spot. And then, you know, there's a lot of younger women wrestlers that are coming up through the ranks. We've seen some of them in Ring of Honor, maybe, and some of them even in TNA. You know, they've brought some of these women in for one-off appearances. When they find the person that's the next baby face in that division that they want to push and really push hard, I think then you use Sienna as a way to sort of try to get that person over. But Andrew, what do you think? What do you sort of see for Gail Kim these last 5 or so months that she has left as an active competitor? Do you think it could go further than that if they were to give her a title run?
I could see it going a little bit longer. And they might want to do that too, just to shake things up. And, you know, everyone would predict that she would be maybe done in December or at Bound for Glory. Like you said, I'm not a fan usually of wrestlers going out on top. I mean, you know, the whole pass the torch thing, but I think Gail Kim is an exception within Global Force TNA, because she is by far in a way the number one knockout they've ever had. I don't even know who would be number two. You know, there's like a couple levels below her, whoever that would be. So if they wanted to do a rare, just feel good ending, I think that would be fine. Otherwise, yeah, you could give Sienna a lot of heat, build Gail up for the next few months. It's her goal to go out on top. She's going to do it at Bound for Glory, and she can't do it. Sienna wins, and it cements her own legacy. So I think there's a couple different ways they could play out that story, and there are some good options on the table for them.
And my final question concerns the amped pilot specials that will be running as one night only pay-per-views, which may lead into changes, which I'll talk about in my question. With Chael Sonnen and I forget the play-by-play announcer's name announcing these AMP One Night Only pay-per-view specials, even though I do not see this happening now, could you see a possibility where, if not the play-by-play announcer, could you see a possibility where Chael Sonnen is retained as a replacement for the Pope, and say, if something happens with Josh Matthews, they get Chael Sonnen's play-by-play announcer, or Mike Tenay, or somebody else in Josh's role?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about that going back to when they were running the angle. Thankfully, you know, the announcer angle's over, but I'm pretty sure Cyrus Fees was the guy that was doing play-by-play for those GFW episodes. He has an MMA background. I believe he's done some wrestling stuff too, but he's a younger guy. I think he's only 32 or 33 years old, but I know he has an MMA background for sure. And obviously, you know, we haven't heard what he sounds like yet. We haven't heard these episodes, or nobody has seen these episodes. So I think it'll be interesting to see what that commentary sounds like. I don't know if they're bringing him in to do any updated commentary. I think Jeff Jarrett said on his conference call last week that Chael Sonnen was coming in to do some voiceover work for the Amped anthology that's going to air. So maybe, I don't know if they're updating both sets of commentary, if they're dubbing new commentary to the shows. Or you know what? It's also possible that they never did the commentary to begin with. You know, it could be very possible when they were filming those pilots that they filmed the matches and were going to have the guys do, you know, a commentary to tape later on. So I'm not sure exactly where that sits, but Cyrus Fees was the guy that was originally supposed to be the play-by-play man for the GFW AMP show. And as for whether they can continue something with Sonnen, I mean, I know he's busy now with Bellator. He's back fighting. Chael Sonnen is electric on the microphone. I think he'd be a great commentator, and obviously has a legitimacy to him as an athlete that I think he could bring something to commentating that really no one else can. Even though he doesn't have a pro wrestling background, he has an MMA background, obviously, and I think he can bring some elements. And the question, I think, for him as a wrestling announcer is, he's so used to putting himself over and talking about himself, how does that translate to trying to get other people over? That would be my one concern, and all it is a concern, because we've never heard him do it before. So I'd be interested in that. You know, I'd be fine and well... I think I've made it known, you know, I'm fine with them going in a different direction from a commentary standpoint, whoever that is. Even though the show's from a commentary standpoint has been better since they finally dropped the ridiculous, you know, announcers bickering with each other angle. Andrew, what are your thoughts there on where we could see the commentary, or what we could see the commentary team look like? And at the same time, you know, are there any elements from those AMP shows that you think Jeff Jarrett might try to work into to Impact once that anthology airs and he sort of introduces people to what that product, you know, his vision to what that product was supposed to look like?
That's an interesting question. I guess, without having seen the shows, it'd be tough to comment on that aspect. And again, yeah, I haven't heard Chael Sonnen call wrestling either, but I would definitely roll the dice on him and get rid of Pope. I just think Pope doesn't add anything to the show. Really, he's not very good, I would say. And yeah, Chael, I'm not much of an MMA guy, but from what I've just like hearing his promos, he is really good. He's entertaining. He's controversial. He would add them a lot of legitimacy and get them some buzz. So I think it would be a great move if they're able to do it, but yeah, not knowing much about MMA, I don't know what his commitments are to Bellator, and what I would all put him in for a few days a month.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually a good point about all this, too. Even if Chael Sonnen was going to be your color guy, at least with the way that they tape their TV right now, you're talking about him coming in for maybe 4 days and then being able to go back to doing whatever he's doing if he's training for a fight or whatnot. I think, though, it would be hard for him to come in and do television when, you know, if it happened to work out that he has a Bellator fight coming up and it's the same, it's the week, you know, of a taping. If Impact's taping Sunday to Thursday and he's got a fight on a Friday or Saturday night for Bellator, it'd be really hard, you know, the week before a fight in training camp to take 4 days off and go announce some TV shows. So it could be a little bit of a challenge, but I think he'd be good in that spot for sure. And then also, Kylan, you know what? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see them take some of the other elements of what Amped was going to look like. I think they're going to stick with the six-sided ring. I don't believe that GFW used a six-sided ring before, or when they were running their house shows and those Amp tapings. I believe it was a standard four-sided ring. But one of the things I know it did have was bright green ropes that actually, it looked kind of cool. And, you know, it really stood out. And it was a small little thing. You know, it wasn't a major thing by any means. But with the implementation of sort of those bright green colors into the Impact logo, I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to change the look, just make it a little more vibrant on their television shows, if nothing else.
You know what? I didn't even think about that, but I agree.
Yeah, I think it would actually, you know what? Now that I look at this, it looks like they were, yeah. I just looked at some photos of their television taping. GFW, they use a six-sided ring. So they use a six-sided ring with green ropes. Oh. So it's very possible, hey, I don't know if he rented the ring or not, but Jeff Jarrett may actually own that ring. so maybe they do go with something like that. You know, who knows? Anything else for us this week, Kylan?
That might be a welcome change if they did. Nope, that's it, guys. We'll talk again next week.
All right, sounds good. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. So we got to get to another break. So let's go to another commercial break. When Andrew and I come back, we'll start to run down the rest of this week's Impact, the segments we haven't talked about yet. There's another potential signing that could be on the horizon that we can discuss. And then we also got to get to our top three, too. Our top three this week are the top three free agent signings that have come back to bite TNA. And, of course, that includes GFW as well. So we'll get to all of that and more talking. We got a lot more to talk about here on the post-Impact version of the PW Torch live cast.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday live cast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
All right, back here on the PW Torch live cast. Before we get to breaking down the parts of this show that we haven't talked about yet, Andrew, earlier this week, GFW announced that Johnny Mundo, former John Morrison, was going to be on their house show loops for those live events in minor league ballparks on August 4th, 5th, and 6th. I think they have two stops in New York and one in Connecticut. He can't be on television. He's under contract to Lucha Underground, and I believe the no-compete there is that he cannot be on TV until 90 days after Season 3 airs, and I think Season 3 airs later this year. I believe I've read it airs in the fall. So he can't be on the show.
It ends in September.
Okay, so he can't be on the show for a while, but with news that he's on these house shows, do you think it could lead to an appearance from him and maybe a contract? Is he a guy that they should, number one, and could bring in maybe come the fall as an injection of some new talent?
Yeah, I think they should. I mean, he is doing great work in Lucha Underground. I was never a big fan of his in WWE just from a character standpoint. But he's really like found himself as an obnoxious heel. I think he would fit in well in WWE, GFW, anywhere. So he's another guy though that does not come cheap. So I don't know if they'll be able to afford both him and Mysterio full time. If they are, I'd say great. He's not a guy that has a lot of that WWE. He doesn't feel like a cast off really because he left on his own and just carved out his own niche. So. Yeah, I would like to see him. I think Taya, his fiance, is also going to be working some shows, and she would be a great addition to the Knockouts as well.
Yeah, no, I did read that as well. You're right. So, you know, I just wonder, around that time in the fall, if there's some contracts up, maybe is he a guy they look to replace some guys that have maybe been there a while and they're trying to get some new faces? Another thing I want to bring up quickly is, and I know I think Wade mentioned this a while ago, but back around, I think it was around the time that Anthem first took over the company, and we first learned, you know, last winter that they were going to be the ones that ended up with the company. Wade had mentioned a thought, or it may have been a caller on the live cast, but somebody, and I thought it was Wade, mentioned that their perspective was GFW should keep, let's say, 6 to 8 guys under written contracts. And those are the 6 to 8 guys that you're going to build around. And those are your cornerstones. And then you can fill out your roster with guys, you know, similar to what they did with Cody Rhodes and Matt Sydal and other guys that you're bringing in on per dates. And it's just sort of known that, hey, you know what? Maybe one day you'll be a guy on a under contract deal and somebody we're building around. But right now we've got our group of 6 to 8. We're going to fill out our roster with guys we're bringing in on per dates and guys we're, you know, bringing in with our talent exchanges with AAA and Pro Wrestling NOAH. And then as the company grows, I think you could grow that number. So let's say right now you start with 6. We're going to have 6 guys under contract. Those are the guys we're building around. Well, maybe a year from now it's 8. And then 2 years from now it's 10. 4 years from now it's 12. You know, you could get to a point where as your company grows, the guys you have under contract grows. And I think it makes it helps from a financial standpoint probably for the company as well. But he's a guy that I think, you know, if you had to pick between guys on the roster and a handful of free agents, he's a guy that I would have up there with Mysterio as a guy they should definitely go after. I believe he's 37 years old, but again, like Mysterio, I saw him at that same indie show this weekend. He does not look 37 years old. You know, he's got a much younger look than that, and I think has more in the tank just because he hasn't been on that full-time WWE schedule for quite a while now. Theoretically, you know, he should have some more miles left for sure.
Yeah, he's a much fresher act too than say El Patron. I guess he's kind of the go-to at the moment for recent busts of signings. Just because, I mean, you know, Patron, we've talked about it before, how poorly pushed he was in WWE on the way out. He was in the League of Nations. He meant nothing. And then he just, you know, kind of short did some indie shows, and picked up a lot of bad stories, and then came in. Whereas Morrison, you know, he went to Lucha Underground. It's crazy entertaining there. I don't, you know, not that many people have seen it, but they're still familiar with him, and a lot of people are wanting to see him return to, say, WWE, which would make it seem like a get for Global Force to bring him in. So, yeah, if they're able to, he should be very much near the top of their list of free agents they should sign.
All right, let's get to some of the segments on this week's episode that we didn't hit on. I'm going to skip most of the LAX El Patron stuff because we've talked about that at the beginning of the show. But the first match, they opened with a match tonight, Sammy Guevara against Drago in the Super X Cup first round. Drago wins this match in 4 minutes. I thought it was a pretty good match, a little quick, but more importantly, it continued the trend, in my opinion, of some really, really great video packages they've put together on these guys heading into these Super X Cup matches where they're talking about how important it is, and especially some of the guys that they're bringing in with these talent exchanges. They're using those 30 to 45 seconds to tell us who they are. And I thought that both of these video packages were good to let us know who these guys are, and they both were letting us know why they wanted to win.
I thought that was really good, too. I was concerned when Drago first showed up. He was just in a T-shirt a couple of weeks ago. It just didn't fit him at all. So I'm glad when they went to that vignette tonight or that interview that they actually played up that he is supernatural like he is in Lucha Underground. Of course, they can't do exactly what they did in Lucha Underground, but I'm glad they took it a different direction. Hopefully, if he sticks around, they do more with, say, his entrance. I think there's a lot more fun and visuals they can have with that. But I'm glad he won in like 4 minutes, I think. Yeah, and just put on a strong showing. So I thought that was a pretty strong start.
After that, they went right back to another match. Sienna beat Amber Nova in 2 minutes and then went to cut a promo after this. And I thought the promo was okay. I mean, they got Karen and Jarrah involved, which I'm not a big fan of. It feels to me like they're... Or like she's copying a little too much of Stephanie McMahon, like trying to be like a babyface version of Stephanie McMahon. But aside from that, I like the fact that this wasn't just Sienna comes to the ring and cuts a promo. You know what? They gave her a win. It was pretty much a squash match, but they gave her a win in 2 minutes. It broke up the segment. I think it helped the flow of it a little bit because it broke up the segment. It wasn't just a long-winded 15-minute promo. It was 2 or 3 minutes of action, probably about 4 minutes of action once you get the ring entrance and then the match and then the promo after. I just thought that this flowed better than your typical, you know, come back from a break, go to a ring entrance, and then a long-winded promo. Getting the match, I think, helps get Sienna over a little bit more, shows some of the stuff that she can do, just reinforces the fact of how dominant she was, and then she gets on the mic afterwards. I thought that this flowed better than what we typically see with pro wrestling here in 2017.
Yeah, I thought the squash was good, but like you said, Karen really thinks she's a Stephanie McMahon at this point. I mean, I don't know. I don't ever recall seeing like a charity video before from Global Force, and
yeah,
they went.
This was the first
pretty
one.
Lengthy one.
Yeah, this was the first
yeah,
one.
Yeah, and it was all about. Yeah, and it was all about Karen Jarrett's on screen, and they did the WWE thing where they showed Eli Drake hanging out with the kids. I mean, again, a great cause, but just for. Leave the heels out of it, but maybe, I don't know. That's just me, maybe.
I'm 100% on board. I agree with you.
Yeah, there's so many other people they can choose to that than, you know, Eli Drake. Yeah, Karen was just overbearing tonight for me. And then she got physically involved. There's just way too many authority figures on the show. I'm sure we'll get to Bruce in a bit, but it is just a mess, and it is obnoxious that they just keep showing up and overshadowing these wrestlers.
Speaking of Bruce, Bruce Pritchard was up next, and I think he turned heel. I mean, I don't really know. That's sort of the problem with this segment. Yeah. But I think if you follow the logic, he turned heel. And basically, he came across Trevor Lee backstage and asked Trevor Lee why he had stolen the X Division title. Lee gave an explanation. As Trevor Lee's giving the explanation, Sanjay Dutt runs in to try to get his title back that was stolen from him. And Bruce Pritchard responds by kicking Sanjay Dutt out of the building and banning him from the building. So the guy that showed up to get the belt back that someone else stole, he got banned from the building. And even at the end of Trevor Lee's explanation, Pritchard said something to the effect of that, you know, I think he thanked him. I think he thanked Trevor Lee for the explanation and said, you know what, it makes a lot of sense. So I think Bruce Pritchard turned heel. I don't really know for sure, but that was sort of my impression here.
Yeah, this is bad. I mean, in WWE, when the authority is running amok, it's at least two heels, so it makes sense that they've got each other's back. Like, why is Dutch Mantel and Kara Jarrett baby faces. Like, why would they hire Bruce Pritchard, or why would they not talk to him?
Yeah, why would they be okay with him banning Sanjay Dutt from the building?
Exactly. Yeah. And again, it's like, it's what's the payoff? Is Bruce Pritchard going to wrestle Sanjay Dutt at Bound for Glory? I probably not. So it's like two feuds going on between wrestlers and non-wrestlers that's not going to go anywhere except for to, I guess, feed the egos of the people in those scenes. And again, Bruce, he's got a great podcast, but they just cannot find the right role for him on this show. And I guess Conrad Thompson made his very first cameo over the phone.
Yeah,
on the show.
Bruce pretended he was talking to Conrad on the phone. you know, I could see this leading to a Bruce Pritchard stable, maybe. Does he try to get a group of wrestlers together? He's already got Tyrus as his bodyguard. You know, does he try to put a group of wrestlers together and he's sort of the mouthpiece for them? I hope Trevor Lee's not one of them, because I feel like he's going to get lost again, like he was lost in the Helms Dynasty a little bit. They didn't really know what to do with him there. But, you know, I almost wonder, is that the direction we're headed here? Is he going to become, you know, is he going to be jettisoned from being an authority figure? Because, like you said, at some point, Dutch Mantel and Karen Jarrett have to come to him and say, you know what, you're not doing your job, you're fired. And he comes back as some sort of manager to look for retribution and says, the storyline, it could be something along the lines of, you know, he's going to take his group of wrestlers and take over the company because whatever. I mean, I'm not vouching for that. I'm not saying that that's going to be any good, but I wonder if that's the if that's the direction they're headed in here.
I would be fine with that. You know, it's better than the inconsistency that it is now.
That's,
I mean,
true.
He's a popular guy. Hundreds of thousands of people listen to his show. There's got to be something they can do with him. So I wouldn't mind a heel stable, although LAX isn't running so hot at the moment. So maybe, who knows? Who knows what they should do with him?
After that, they stuck with some more X Division stuff. And Octagoncito, well, Tag Division and X Division sort of thrown in together. Octagoncito, Laredo Kid, and Garza Jr. beat Idris Abraham, Damus, and Trevor Lee in a six-man tag. This was, I felt a little thrown together to me. The only guy in this match that's involved in any type of storyline right now is Trevor Lee, and he was not involved at all in the finish of the match, which just, to me, made it feel a little strange in that, you know, there was really no consequence to it. I mean, yeah, it was a match. Yeah, somebody got a win, somebody got a loss, but the one guy that seems to be involved in the storyline right now was, I think, on the outside of the ring when the pin was made, and his team didn't even get the win. So that was probably my one big issue with this match, is that, hey, you know what? If you're going to do this, you're going to throw these six guys together, Trevor Lee probably should get the win here. You know, he's the one guy involved in a storyline right now. All these other guys are just sort of, you know, fillers for the time being. They're not really involved much at all.
Yeah, I had the same thought. That felt thrown together. So did the four-way match we'll talk about in a bit. I thought it was going to be a showcase for Trevor Lee and just have him look dominant in this new role. But he was just portrayed as more of a comedy guy because he wore the belt throughout the whole thing, which is fine, I guess. But yeah, it just felt kind of random and kind of pointless, I guess.
Yeah, that was sort of my thought, too. It felt a little pointless. They threw to some clips throughout the night. The first one, I think, was here, and they ran to one later in the show as well. But Grado was on his date with Laura Van Ness because they pushed something on the website. They think they said that they announced it earlier this week online that she had agreed to go with Grado on a date. So they were pushing the website. I know they're very much into posting YouTube clips and trying to get social media involved and get people directed to their platforms online, which is smart. But this was all comedy. I actually, again, Laurel Van Ness as the crazy person has been a guilty pleasure of mine for a while. I think she's entertaining. I think the thing is funny. And I got a kick here out of a couple of things. They're on a date in a restaurant. Grado's in his full gear. He's in his wrestling gear, which I thought was hilarious. Laurel Van Ness is in the same wedding dress she's been in for 4 months. With makeup smeared all over her face. And the whole shtick here throughout the clips was that Grado, who they, you know, bill and have shown to be sort of the, you know, the out of shape guy, and all of a sudden he's disgusted by Laurel Van Ness, which I thought was, again, it's a guilty pleasure, I'm sure. I'm sure there's plenty of people that hated it, but I was okay with this. I thought some of this was pretty funny.
I'm with you. Maybe I should be ashamed, but I did get a few laughs out of it. I can't remember whatever she was like pouring in her mouth and like crawling towards him.
It was pepper. Yeah, it was a thing of pepper.
Oh yeah. Although her eating like an entire, I don't know what that was, an omelet in one bite. That's a little too much for me. That's too cartoonish, but whatever. I guess the whole thing was. So
yeah.
Yep. I'm with you. Laurel Van Ness continues to be a guilty pleasure after. Yeah, man, 4 or 5 months of this. Somehow it's still working for me. For people that are not on board, it is probably really painful at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but I mean, because it's been a while. But you know what? I'm not sick of it yet, and that's saying something. They went to a three-way after this. Matt Sydal beat Loki in Phantasma. I had it timed at 14 minutes. I actually had a phone call I had to take during this match, so I had it on in the background. But I had it clocked in at about 14 minutes. Sydal gets the win here. He cut a promo after the match, called up Bruce Pritchard, said that Pritchard had sort of laid the groundwork that, hey, if Sydal gets the win, he'd get an X-Division title shot. Then Bobby Lashley interrupted. Lashley was demanding a world title opportunity from Pritchard, said he was sick of seeing all these other people come in and get title shots after he had one hiccup at Slammiversary. The segment ended with Lashley spearing Matt Sydal in the ring. Same thing they did with the Sienna thing earlier, and that, you know, Sydal cuts a promo after the match. I'm okay with stuff like this. It's something, you know, the UFC does and Bellator, where the winners of matches are generally interviewed in the cage. It's something wrestling used to do, you know, the Gene Okerlund with the post-match interview, either backstage or on the ramp. I think, you know, WCW on Nitro, a lot of times it was on the ramp as guys were heading in the backstage area. So, I like stuff like this where a guy wins a match and then you hear from him. I think it gives everybody an opportunity to speak. But this segment here I thought was a little weird. You know, I don't know why Lashley would come out when Sydal is asking for an X Division title shot. It has nothing to do with his world title shot. And then Lashley spearing Sydal, I thought fit the storyline a little bit because Lashley's whole point was, hey, I'm going to start to destroy everything if I don't get my way. And Sydal happened to be the wrong place at the wrong time and he was victim number one. But Lashley's involvement here is what felt a little strange to me, where, you know, I'm not sure why he picked that moment in time when it appears, through what we've learned watching the show, pretty much anybody can walk up to Bruce Pritchard at any time and start talking to him backstage.
Yeah. I like the idea as well of interviews right after the match, but I thought this was bad. Sydal, I think I thought he was laughably bad, actually, because he's just like on one knee. Well, Bobby Lashley is like demanding a shot, instead of getting in Bobby Lashley's face and being like, no, this is my time, he's on one knee going like, no, it's about the X Division title. He just came across as really whiny to me. And then I do not get why he's getting such a big push. I've been saying it for months now, but I think Loki is the much more interesting wrestler. I think he's the cooler wrestler, but it looks like they're moving on from him and really going in on Sydal. But it didn't work for me.
Another thing that didn't work for me was after this, they started to do the ring entrances for the Fatal 4-Way match. Eli Drake was out first with Chris Adonis. Adonis threw a cup of water on the Swole Mates. Here we go. One of the Swole Mates jumped the barricade, ran into the ring, clotheslined Adonis. The other Swole Mate got in the ring. They cornered Drake. Drake, you know, backed down and crawled out of the ring. And I'm telling you, I'm not happy about it, but I see this leading to a tag team match at some point with Drake and Adonis against these two gorillas. And it's gonna happen. You know, these guys, I don't think have any, we said it last week, I don't think they have any business being in the ring. They're, you know, jacked up out of their minds, great. But they're not wrestlers. They're not in a show. You know, this isn't promoting some, you know, show on CBS, some network show that's big and gets a lot of people to watch and a lot of viewers. These are just two cartoonishly jacked up individuals on a show that no one's going to watch. And here they are, you know, basically getting over on one of your, probably your number two heel, or maybe LAX is moving into that spot, but one of your bright young heels. I didn't like anything about this.
Yeah, terrible. The swole guy threw an awful-looking clothesline. It tears down everything when this happens, because a couple months ago, Adonis came in. He went like 15 minutes with El Patron. So
that's
are
a good
they
point.
Saying, like, the swole guy? Yeah, are the swole guys just as good as El Patron then? And if they are, why am I watching Adonis? Why am I watching Eli Drake? You know, get rid of them and hire these swole guys if they're so good, and D'Angelo Williams and all these other people. I hate stuff like that. These guys are two trained fighters. They should stretch them and beat the crap out of them in 30 seconds, kick them off, and never see them again. But the 200 people that are going to watch this show, I guess, they need to cater to them for some reason.
And that's the thing. Like, okay, if it's a big celebrity even, I get it. These guys aren't even celebrities. I mean, who are they?
Right.
You know, they're just two...
no idea.
They're just two jacked up guys that happen to get a TV show on Pop TV. It's, yeah. If it's big jacked up guy who's, you know, a former pro bowler in the NFL and everyone knows who he is, and okay, I get it. You know, it's going to bring you some publicity. Okay. You know, I might not like it, but I understand it. But this just... It's almost like they're trying to make nice with the network, but I don't really think they have to. I mean, if they're in a barter deal, I mean, what's their incentive to give their television time to these guys? Unless Pop TV is paying them for it. You know, the only thing I can think of is, did Pop TV come to them and say, hey, you know, essentially we want to pay for advertising on your show to promote these two guys and their show? Then, okay, if you're making money with it, I understand a little bit more than I do now, but at least on the surface from what we're seeing, it makes no sense, and just it looks terrible.
I agree. Yeah, just randomly last weekend I looked up their Facebook page. I must have been bored. They had 97 likes for that show. It hadn't debuted yet, but if people knew who these swole guys were, and oh man, they got their own show, I can't wait to see this. There are 97 people on the planet who are excited for this show.
Yeah, just a waste of time. Eli Drake, though, did win this fatal four-way against EC3 Moose and Eddie Edwards. He won it in 6 minutes. I thought Josh Matthews was good here at the end of this match, where he sort of talked about how, you know, Eddie Edwards had the match won, and then EC3 had the match won, and then Eli Drake stole it. You know, I thought that Matthews was good explaining that. He wasn't really being a heel. You know, he was just being an announcer, kind of a straight announcer. He was getting a little heelish at times, talking about himself here and there, but it wasn't to the point where it was annoying by any means. A little short. I only had the match go in 6 minutes. I thought maybe it would have gone a little longer, but Eli Drake gets the win here. I was actually happy to see him get the win here. I thought it was a good time, even though, you know, he's a heel. You know, did he sort of cheat and steal the win from somebody else? Yeah, but you know what? He's a heel. He's supposed to do stuff like that.
Got to get some heat on him for that swole showdown.
Exactly.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Just how I mentioned it before, just very random. It just felt kind of pointless, I guess. It was fine. It wasn't like painful to watch or anything. It just felt very random, and what is it heading towards, I guess. Maybe they'll come up with something, but that was just kind of running through my head.
Yeah, me too. All right, well, that sort of runs through everything else that we haven't talked about. We talked about the LAX Conan stuff, LAX El Patron stuff, excuse me, at the beginning of the show. So we're going to go to another commercial break. When we come back, Andrew and I will give you our top three, this week's top three, the top three free agent signings that have come back to bite TNA. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Speaking of Wade's weekly interview, the podcast that drops, I believe, late tonight, not too long, I believe it drops around midnight, so not long from now, but should be in your podcast feed tomorrow morning if you subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Tomorrow's interview, Jack Swagger and former WWE creative team member John Piermarini will be Wade's guests, so definitely looking forward to that. This week, Andrew and I, well, we bring your top three every week, but this week's top three, the top three free agent signings that have come back to bite GFW. Obviously, we're mostly talking about TNA because that's historically, you know, GFW hasn't been around long enough to really have many bad signings, I guess. But let's get right to it. What was your number three signing that have come back that came back to bite TNA?
I know we say this pretty much every week, how we could go to like 8 or 9, and this is no exception.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There have been way too many people that TNA should have never signed, and all the writing was on the wall. Okay, anyways, number three, I'm going to get nasty with this pick and go with the Nasty Boys in 2010. Hogan and Bischoff came in. Nobody wanted to see it, but Hogan's good buddies with Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags, and he brought him in to feud with the Dudleys. Just, oh, God, it was awful. I mean, they had, like, the Machine Guns on the roster, the Young Bucks, who were Generation Me, and the Nasty Boys are getting pushed on TV. So how it came back to bite them is that at a Spike TV get-together, TNA wrestlers were there. There was a bunch – all the wrestlers were there. Dixie Carter was there, I believe. And Brian Knobbs was acting up and embarrassed himself and embarrassed the company. And so they fired him after only a few months. I cannot imagine they would have lasted much longer anyway. But just such a weird, horribly, like that. It was like 15 years past their, oh God, no, let's say 20 years past their prime. Yeah,
easily.
Bring those guys in.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah, for sure. My number three is actually the one we've talked about for the last several weeks, and it's El Patron. I think he's as many bad ones of there as there have been. Right now is such a critical time for them as a company to try to move forward and to try to make sure, you know, they get themselves, get that footing back a little bit, and they're trying to build to a new TV deal. They're trying to get their audience back. It's such a critical time for them, and to have this type of distraction and to have this type of issue that they got to deal with, I mean, the timing just could not be worse. And I don't think it will necessarily derail them, but it's not going to help them move in the right direction either. So I think El Patron, I mean, when you look back, there's been plenty of guys who have come in and just, you know, stunk the joint out from a match standpoint. But this sort of goes beyond that from a PR standpoint. And I think it's going to... Mm-hmm. I think it has the potential to do some damage. Hopefully it doesn't, but it certainly has the potential to do some real damage here.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Yeah, like you said, just terrible timing for them. When they originally signed him, I was optimistic, I guess, that he could, you know, show some fire and get in the ring and leave his troubles behind. But yeah, it's only accelerated and gotten worse and just been pretty embarrassing for everyone involved.
What did you have as your number two?
My number two, this guy has come back to bite them multiple times and they kept on bringing him back. The bad guy, Scott Hall. Yeah, he's had quite a few runs with the company. He was involved in the Kings of Wrestling. Oh, even earlier than that, when the company first started, he was on the very first show. Of course, you know, Scott Hall has had his demons. That's very well publicized. But his most infamous way he kind of came back to bite them was that he no-showed a pay-per-view match with Samoa Joe. And then live on air, he shot on him. And I think Kevin Nash and Samoa Joe got into a big argument backstage. But I mean, knowing Hall's history to that point before his, you know, DDP yoga days and getting cleaned up, you had to know what you were going to expect. And then they still brought him back later, I think during the band era. And then, you know, just they've gone through it like 4 or 5 times and they just never learned.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that I had on my short list for sure, for those same reasons. You know, like you said, for whatever reason, they seem to never learn. they would make the mistake over and over again. My number two is Booker T. And He was a guy that when they signed him, and I don't remember the exact year. I don't remember if it was 2000. I want to say it was around, what, 2009? I think it was before Hogan even. But Booker T came in.
I want to say 2008, because I think he had a feud with Samoa Joe right after that lockdown match.
You know what? I think you're right. So he was pretty hot at that time, because he had come in. He was world heavyweight champion in WWE around 2006. He was, you know, King Booker at that point. He was one of their top heels, really, on the SmackDown side for a while. Ends up going to TNA, and I remember at the time, you know, people being excited about that. You know, this is a guy that it wasn't long after they brought in Kurt Angle. Now they're bringing in Booker T. It looked like they were really starting to gain some traction and bringing in some top names. And Booker T just never delivered in TNA the entire time he was there. I can't really think of one memorable thing from a positive standpoint that he had his entire run with the company. And then, you know, the reports had come out that, you know, maybe he was just he wasn't as invested as he should have been. I mean, it certainly came across that way on screen. So just given the fact that there was a lot of potential there when they did sign him, and I'm sure he didn't come cheap. I'm sure there was quite a few dollars heading his way, considering where he was at the time when he signed. That's where I think it came back to bite him, because you know what? There was a lot, I'm sure a lot that was invested in him, and it never really reached the potential that it should have and that people thought it was going to when he first signed.
I definitely thought of him as well. When he first came in, he kind of had like the Christian Cage thing where he was being underutilized at the time, because I think Triple H had just squashed him in like a 6-minute match and over the whole King thing. So he was pissed off, and you thought maybe he'd be motivated and want to help take TNA to the next level. And then he engaged in that feud with Bobby Roode that just never ended. Both good guys did not click. And yeah, like you said, it just never got better for Booker for there. In my mind, I only remember him really from screwing around on commentary with Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
Like that seemed to be the whole reason he'd show up for work, is just to screw around for a bit, because he was not even putting on 3-star matches at that time.
Yeah, totally. Who did you have as your number one?
Number one, yeah, I had to think about this one a bit. I'm going to go with Matt Hardy, actually. He did have that fantastic run a year or so ago, but when they first brought him in, there was absolutely no way they should have brought him in. He was clearly troubled in WWE to the point where it was scary. I mean, he was making all these videos.
Yeah.
It looked like he was on a lot of stuff. And in no way, shape, or form should they brought him in. And then they did. And of course, he just kept having problem after problem. He was, I think, had DUIs. He wrecked his car. And the signs were so obvious that something was wrong with him. And they brought him in and made him a featured act. And it was just, the company gets a lot of well-deserved criticism for bringing in Kurt Angle when they did. And I feel Matt Hardy was even above that for how troubled he was at the time. So that he is my number one for that.
That's a really good point. I actually didn't even think about that. I mean, I had considered him, but for that same reason. But that's a good point. He was the amount they took a lot of heat for that. I think I remember, for saying, hey, you know, here's a guy that needs help, and they're just continuing to throw him out there like nothing's wrong. I went in a little bit of a different direction, and although he wasn't really a full-time wrestler when they signed him, he did kind of become one. But my number one was Hulk Hogan, and I think it's pretty obvious why. From a wrestling standpoint, he had no business being in the ring, and he was old and battered and beaten up, and it showed. They didn't hire him or sign him to be a wrestler, though, obviously. They hired him. Dixie Carter hired him to run the company. And I think you can make the argument that a lot of the reasons that they're in the hole that they're in now and off of Spike TV and seeing their viewership diminish as much as it has, I think you could go back and attribute that a lot to the failed ideas of Hulk Hogan. You know, I think that, yeah, it sounds great to go live every Monday and take the show on the road and do all this stuff, but financially they couldn't support it. And that's where the problem was. It was you had Hulk Hogan who had all these big ideas, and they weren't bad ideas, but you didn't have somebody who was in charge of the checkbook like Dixie Carter was supposed to be, being able to tell Hulk Hogan, hey, you know what? That's a good idea, but we can't do that because we don't have the money to do that. And I think it put them, I think it put her in a lot of trouble. I think ultimately a lot of those decisions and the money that was wasted are the reasons why her parents and Panda Energy pulled out of the company and pulled out of their financial support. And really, once that happened, that's when things started to spiral for TNA. You know, once they lost the support of Panda, that's when checks started bouncing. That's when production companies weren't getting paid. And that's when ultimately she ended up having to sell the company. So I think for those reasons, I have Hulk Hogan as the number one signing that came back to bite them. And it was obviously a little different than what he did in the ring.
That is a great pick. From a pure financial standpoint, I don't think it has been a worse investment than him. I think he was making like $35,000 just for every show, which is probably close to what some of the lowly mid-carders were making an entire year for them.
Yeah.
When they would show up. At first it was very exciting. There was, you know, some optimism that him and Bischoff could turn this thing around. They'd learned their lessons from WCW maybe, but no, they just made the same mistakes. And he was just, he became unbearable. I mean, that Immortal stable was just god awful.
That was bad.
He was on TV on a 2-hour show. I mean, it felt like 40 minutes of it was devoted to Hogan for a while. Probably wasn't that much, but it felt like it. And he just overshadowed everything. He sucked all the oxygen out of the room. There's not much you can do with Hogan. He's just that personality that you can't have him play a manager or a GM who only shows up once a month or something. So, just a terrible investment that nearly doomed them.
Yeah, I mean, really, if they weren't able to sell to Anthem, it probably would have. You know, I've even been told, hey, if Billy Corgan didn't make the investment that he made at Slammiversary last year, they were going belly under then. if it wasn't for the money that he gave them at that point, they wouldn't have been able to move on past that show. So, or that show maybe even wouldn't have happened. So that is our top three for this week, and we are rapidly running out of time. So we're going to get close to wrapping things up. But before we do, we want to tell you a little bit about PW Torch VIP. If you go VIP, one of the things you will hear is a VIP after show that Andrew and I are going to record right at the conclusion of tonight's show. It'll be exclusive for VIP members at pwtorch.com. And you can go VIP by going to pwtorch.com/goVIP. You'll get to hear our after show and a whole lot of other stuff if you go VIP. Here is just some of what you'll get by going VIP here at PW Torch.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Shad Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
All right, back here on the PW Torch live cast, Andrew and I are here with you every Thursday as soon as Impact goes off the air here with the post-Impact live cast edition of the PW Torch live cast. And of course, all the Wade Keller shows, like we mentioned earlier, you can check out at Podcast One. Just search for the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast in your favorite podcast application, including iTunes, Downcast, anything on a mobile device. You can just search Wade Keller. Just search for his name, and I'm sure it'll come up, and you can subscribe right in your favorite app for podcasts. Andrew, anything else you want to add before we get out of here for this week?
I will have the Impact hits and misses up tomorrow on the Torch. Spoiler alert, Swole will be on there. Will they be on the hits or the misses? You'll have to read to check out tomorrow. Otherwise, Andrew Socek on Twitter, Souck, and check out PW Podcasts every single day for to read up on every podcast, big podcast out there in the wrestling world.
You can find me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. I have a report of tonight's episode of Impact up on pwtorch.com. And that'll do it for this week's edition of the post-Impact PW Torch livecast. Andrew and I, for VIP members, will be back in just a couple of minutes with a VIP after show. I think we're going to talk about the Kurt Angle reveal on Raw this last week with Jason Jordan. And then also talk a little bit about Dixie Carter, who was speculated to be that reveal, and whether or not, you know, she would make a good character addition for WWE on Raw or SmackDown. So if you're a VIP member, stay tuned for that. If you're not a VIP member, we'll talk to you next week right here on the PW Torch livecast. Yeah.